podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. You may be surprised, today's Friday, Good Friday, and it is not normal that we are publishing on a Friday, but this is a special day shortly before Easter. It's a public holiday in Germany, meaning a bank holiday in other countries. Plus, there was all the craze in non-fungible tokens recently, and therefore I got an expert here on board, a member of the ITSA. Hey, Christian. How you doing, and can you tell us what ITSA really is and what it means?
Yes, thank you so much for having me here. ITSA is a short name for a longer name, which stands for International Token Standardization Association, which is basically a non-profit organization that brings together players in the blockchain scene and tries to establish a standard for tokens that are around in the space, to have one standard of token IDs and be able to differentiate between different kinds of tokens, and to just bring some more standard into this field. And it has several members, companies, but also people like me who are just interested in the field and therefore contributing to this.
I have just been checking the website because you guys are headquartered here in Germany, in Berlin, and I already found interview partners: AnyBlock Analytics, Bitbond, Bidwala, Mein Inkubator, Main Incubator, and a few more and Börse Stuttgart, of course, and a few more from our news. So it's like almost all the people got together in Germany to standardize tokens. Usually they would be interested in standardizing security tokens, I assume?
All kind of tokens. I think security token is just one topic that is definitely from interest, especially for investors, but also just in general, this association helps to have one united view on how the regulation of tokens should be done. And then be able to, for example, propose this idea to politics and so forth. And it's not just security tokens. End of the day, it's to just bring more light into the market. And that's basically it. So it can be something like a utility token that is just used for a specific service. It could be a payment token that is the typical Bitcoin example, but also, just as you mentioned, as a security token, which is used for an STO, a security token offering, and other activities. And basically has a database where we can, members, but also non-members to some extent, can look up the specific international token identification number, the ETIN, and then being able to identify from this token what is the class of this, and being able to use this for analysis or other purpose of getting transparency in the market.
I see. And people who listen and watch this channel on a regular basis, they know I'm the king of Dieters, and the ITIN or ETIN here would be something similar to the ISIN, where you international can identify securities and then you can look it up everywhere with the same idea. Am I right?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
And now from our detour back a little bit to what we've been talking about, the non-fungible tokens. Let us first talk about what fungibility actually means, because I do believe a lot of people say out there are looking, NFT is fungibility. What may that mean?
Yes. So NFT, as it stands for non-fungible token, and as you said, the important work is here actually what does fungible mean. And fungible, for example, is something that is a single unit, but it's identical and can be exchanged for another unit. I think the biggest fungible token or asset that we know is, I think, the $20 bill or $10 bill, where we know every $10 bill looks the same, feels the same, and is worth the same money. And into the crypto world, this would be, for example, a Bitcoin, which is fungible, which can be exchanged and is identically the same. That is the...
For example, like a stock of Citibank, of a Daimler, whatever is out there, you sell one, you buy one, you get exactly the same. They're fungible.
Yes, exactly. And this is a concept we use basically every day. And then if we look at the other part of the word, so if we look at NFT, so we have this non-part in front, it just means that it's not identical and not, they're not like hundreds of stocks of a specific kind or hundreds of $20 bills. There's just one unique token. And this uniqueness makes NFT special and allows ideas and use cases they would not be able to afford to represent.
In the first moment, when I understood what an NFT is, I thought, what may this be useful for? But then I realized it can be like the digital twin, the digital incorporation of something unique. And what always comes to mind is like any type of artwork, may it be physical, may it be digital, right?
Yes. So as you mentioned the word digital twin, which is one version of saying we have an art piece that exists in the physical world and you just have a digital representation of this piece and then being able to trade it and to transfer this asset. I think that is step one. If we think a little bit further and think about our current world, most of our life is digital these days. So we don't always have physical assets that are related to. So we can also just have, we're using social media channels like Twitter, like Instagram and other, where there's only a digital representation of an image or a tweet or so forth. And this can then be kind of stored in one unique NFT, and then someone can have ownership of a tweet, for example. Or as you said, in the art world, we have a lot of digital artists who don't paint pictures. They're gonna end up in museums or in your living room. They're just producing digital art, which only exists on your screen. And that is a way of actually storing this ownership and then being able to trade this ownership to someone else.
It's as I said, it's not necessarily limited to digital ownership, digital artwork in any type of form, but it would be also applicable, for example, for an impressionist painting, which could be like incorporated as an, is incorporated right word, as an NFT?
Yes. So it is, that is end of the day, the question, there are not really limitations to what you can represent in NFT. I think your limitation is your mind, because you can come up with any concept you can think of. And as long as you find someone in the market that agrees that this is unique and this is for something, you will be able to sell it and store it. So you can say, okay, I have just a kind of a digital ownership of a physical art piece. So whoever owns that token then owns the art piece. And it just is stored in some kind of museum or some physical location. And you just have the ownership and it's just recorded in the chain. Or you could also say that it is not directly the ownership itself. So if you look into tweets, for example, you're end of the day not owning the tweet. So Twitter still has that tweet on their platform. You just have a signature from the creator of that tweet who then says, well, I created this tweet and I will give you now this NFT, which is the representation of this tweet, and you can own this on this tweet, which end of the day is the belief into that tweet and into belief that this tweet is unique and then can be traded, which is an interesting concept and hard to, it's not always possible to transfer from the physical world to the digital world. But as you said before, yes, assets can be physical and digital.
Before we get to a little bit how you could apply this like in a business sense and the impact, for example, I see there will be a big one on the art market. Before that, let us get a little bit into the technicalities. Just a tiny bit, the people out there know that the highest coding level I've ever achieved was Visual Basic for applications. So we're not going to take a deep dive here. And I do believe that's also not necessary. You talked about two things. I would be happy if you could tell us a little bit more about. One of them was the chain? So basically, is there like already a standard blockchain for NFTs out there, or are there hundreds or thousands, or is there a blockchain for each NFT? And then you talked about the marketplace. And my second question would be, are there already standardized marketplaces out there?
Yeah, these are great questions. And coming to the first, to the blockchain technology itself, let's dive a little bit into history. I mean, that's 2.5 years ago. Let's call it history. In the blockchain world, that already is history. But the standard was started on the Ethereum chain. So there are several drafts or suggestions for what kind of standards for tokens that can be on the Ethereum chain. And one of them is the ERC 721 standard. And this standard just basically covers the functionality of an NFT token. And since this standard exists, so the blockchain community and the Ethereum community agreed, yes, that's a good way of representing such non-fungible assets on the chain. It has become standard, has been used in several applications. For example, the first application was the CryptoKitties, which is basically a random generated cat that has some functionalities. That's basically it, and it has been traded and has been quite popular across the community. But that was the first application, which was built on the Ethereum chain. And since then, Ethereum has been the standard, but since it has drawbacks in terms of number of transaction, and we know that the gas price to process transaction is quite high these days due to the proof of work that is happening. So there are several other chains that are sometimes specifically built for NFTs. For example, the Flow chain, the Matic chain, and then more specific chains that focusing on very specific use cases that are used. And even on top of Ethereum itself, you can also have kind of your own tokens and coins that then represent a specific way of representing these NFTs. So there are not thousands of chains, but there are probably at least 50 to 100. But I would say the most used are below 10. And by most used in terms of volume, it is still the Ethereum chain, just because it started there and it used to be the standard. But slowly we're seeing more and more technologies popping up and kind of solving issues that Ethereum has experienced for NFTs. And we always need to bear in mind, Ethereum was not invented and built, or the whole purpose was not NFT. It is just one application that is built on top of it. And that's why it also has some drawbacks. And these drawbacks are solved by, let's say, competitors. And we will see in the future that these competitors will gain more and more traction, and might even surpass the Ethereum chain in terms of numbers at some day.
And the marketplace.
The marketplace, yeah. And that's where everything comes together. And end of the day, that is also where it's decided which chain is being used, right? So at the beginning, marketplaces usually just use the Ethereum chain, but slowly adapting other chains to integrate. So what these marketplaces are doing, let's take a step back. Let's look at the architecture of an NFT. So we have the chain, the blockchain in the beginning. Then we have an NFT token contract. And then we have the actual NFT. So we have kind of three level of hierarchies. And if you're opening marketplace, or if marketplace is out there, you need to first decide, okay, which chain do I want to include? Let's say I'm including all Ethereum contracts from the Ethereum chain. Then you need to kind of find this specific contract that, for example, covers one specific use case for one case, and then you have the tokens itself that you can access on this specific chain and contract. And there are several marketplaces. OpenSea, for example, is I would say the biggest one. Then you have Rarible, which is for more crypto art, and there are many more, and they're popping up. Each day, they're popping up new marketplaces, and some of the marketplaces then specify on just one specific blockchain technology or one specific chain, as I said before, because each marketplace needs to decide, okay, what time do I invest into developing and kind of including a new chain, make it accessible, have a nice user interface, and so forth. And that is obviously a trade-off between development and profit end of the day. And if you look at from a VC perspective onto this, we can see that there has been some quite substantial investments be done in the last month. Last month, in plural. We can see that some VC money is, for example, $23 million was raised to OpenSea. Depalabs raised $11 million in a funding round. So we can see there's also the VC capital is flowing into these marketplaces. And then we will end of the day see who has the most funding and has the best developers and can integrate all of these blockchains in the user-friendly way.
What I had in mind when I was starting to grasp what NFTs are was like, for example, Christie's and Sotheby's, they would be just more than happy to have an NFT digitally delivered together with the real artwork, because it also helps them to verify that it's the real artwork. So basically, I do believe there are also like big players at one point in the future entering the market if they not already have or in the first steps to do so. That would bring me to just another topic, because the art market, it's like zillions of awesome artwork, less awesome artwork out there, wannabe awesome artwork, and everybody has their own opinion of it, and that's totally fine. But can you see like 1-3 years down the road that there will be an impact on the art market? Because my understanding is that there are very specific paintings that you buy to hang above your open cabin. If you have a Picasso painting worth millions, you don't want to bring it near open fire, but that's just the general idea. But there's also artwork that is bought and sold just for investment purposes, and usually the item stays at something like a free harbor, like a tax-free interstate between different countries where it doesn't have to be taxed. And if you have it in a very safe place in such a free harbor, then it would be much easier to trade them via NFTs. You see any impact there?
Yes, exactly. I think there's going to be a great movement and a lot of impact onto the art market. I mean, we've already seen it. You mentioned Christie's, one of the largest auction houses. They had an auction of one picture, and it was auctioned like one digital picture, so one that only existed as an NFT, which is basically 5,000 pictures over a picture done every day, one picture over 5,000 days. So a picture consisting out of 5,000 smaller pictures. And this one was auctioned for $70 million, which is an enormous amount of money if you think of digital art, which was not possible before. So I think we have two ways. One way is we're opening completely new marketplaces and completely new customers to digital art. The digital artists, for example, over such auctions, over like these established auction houses. Plus, there's a possibility of you do not need to physically own a painting to invest into it, right? So you can own an NFT that represents the ownership of this painting, and then you can store this NFT in your wallet, it's safely, and you have another storage provider on the other side who stores the painting, and then you can trade it and have a different way of representing it. Or if you want to go one step further, there was also one very interesting example of a burnt picture. So it was a famous picture that was just burnt into ashes. And then this burnt picture, which doesn't exist anymore, was then stored on an NFT, which is obviously a crazy example. And it's probably not a normality. We're not going to burn all of our famous art pieces, but it just shows that there's really no limitation to imagination as long as you have something that represents value to another person. It can be used as an NFT and can be used as an also to invest money and hope it's gonna increase in money or just store it.
What I had in mind, I used to work a lot in capital markets and asset management, would be to have actually a fund and then buy with the investors' money NFTs. And so you also have, again, a type of most likely hedge art fund. That would be something. I know the art lovers out there would just hate it, but that's one possible way a lot of artwork will go. The big advantage would be if you have the NFT actually in a fund, you can have like the economic benefit in the fund, but there's no reason against it as long as it's stored safely to have the artwork that belongs to a hedge fund display in a public museum, right?
Yes, exactly. So we're opening completely a new way of ownership into the art world. And also we can gain more transparency about who actually owns which picture, because if you're recalling some of the basis or most of the blockchain technologies out there that are being used are public blockchains. So everyone is able to have a transparency. Okay, when was this NFT created? Who was this traded for and for what price? So this opens a completely new way of gaining transparency over artwork and how it changed ownership. So I think this is also one definitely benefit for having NFTs.
And we may add that this NFT, even though it sounds totally crazy, it's just a contract. It's like a physical, it's like a digital contract for an artwork, physical or non-physical. And basically it's a contract. So how would you think it will be used in the future? For example, an NFT owning like a digital song, like a digital or physical artwork, and then you can basically prove it's yours and you can cash in the royalties. You see something like this in the future?
Yes, I think that is, you mentioned a very, very good point of the ownership part. So having the possibility to give the artist of some music piece or even videos or whatever, we give the possibility to actually have the artist owning it and being able to retrieve royalty fees. And we're also seeing, like, on the market, let's say we're seeing who is backing, for example, Vani Music is a big backer of NFTs and has already invested money. There are also rumors in the news that the acquisition from Tidal, that Square is planning to buy Tidal as a company, is one step into the NFT world for music artists, right? I mean, Square, we're having one of the largest publicly traded Bitcoin reserves, is definitely interested in that topic. And therefore, these are all business models that are completely new to us. So basically, when I would then listen to a song, I would be able, by just listen to it, would be guaranteed, and everyone could see or could kind of have the transparency that there actually was a royalty fee paid to that artist, and everyone can see what royalty fee was paid. And we're kind of overcoming this issue that there's kind of a company like Spotify, Apple Music, or so forth between us, who is then deciding who artist gets which cut. And no, but everything's going to be transparent, and that will change the, or has the potential to change, for example, the way we have resharing royalties in the music industry.
Plus, I can see in the future, for example, that a musician is very happy, had enough crazy life and wants to retire, and puts albums or single songs into NFTs, auctions them out and retires on the money. And usually, like we know, most of the musicians, they will be back making music in like 5 years down the road.
Exactly. And we have seen the first NFT for music being sold already. Kings of Leon has its first album published on an NFT, and it is not just an NFT, it's kind of a combination of an NFT in a physical world. So you can buy, or could buy, it's actually already over. You could have bought one of the limited number of golden NFTs, which end of the day are, you can download the songs of the new album, and you will also get some kind of physical memory of this moment, and then you're an owner of this NFT, and you can trade it, and you have this kind of special connection to your favorite band. And that is not just, I mean, this is something that already exists in the physical world, right? Everyone wants to have that autogram by your biggest idol. So why don't have it on an NFT, where you can where you can share this online with others to show, hey, that's where I got my signature. I'm owning one of the 100 limited albums, for example. So we've already seen use cases, and I think the more and more we mature in this industry, we will see plenty of them or more of them coming up in the future.
Let us touch one final topic. As we said, NFT is just digitally incorporated, a contract. Are there already laws out there that this specifically as an NFT is enforceable, or do you have a private contract and wherever you want to enforce it across the world, you have to deal with the local legal system?
Yeah, I mean, there's so far no specific NFT regulation, right? That says this is an NFT and that's how we're treating it. For example, I said like a security token where we had laws in place and we're able to have a transaction where everyone is sure this is also legal what we're doing here. Since we're still at the beginning, there's no clear rules. But having said this, we already have regulations in place for the blockchain and crypto market in general, right? So, for example, in order to buy an NFT, you need to have a cryptocurrency. And how are you getting that cryptocurrency? Well, you need to go to one exchange, and this exchange has KYC and money laundering regulations in place, and it's kind of checking your identity before. So there's kind of this entry point to the market is a little bit limited. And then it comes to the discussion, what is actually an NFT? Is an NFT a utility token? Because you have the utility to use a specific picture or having access to I don't know, if you do some backstage tickets to a concert, which are stored in NFT, that would kind of be utility, you can have access to it. Or are you actually talking about some kind of asset you're storing? And then if you would store an asset, you would come always into this discussion of, do you need a custody license to actually run one of these marketplaces and to be able to store or to kind of have the private key to end of the day access this asset, and you get into the custody discussion. So I think it's going to be an interesting discussion to see what regulators are thinking about NFTs, if they're going to push it into an already existing category, or if they say, well, this is such a special or kind of, because it doesn't always 100% overlap with existing regulation. It just has partly overlaps. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if there's going to be a kind of specific NFT regulation, or if it's just going to be kind of adapting or being squeezed into the categories already out there. And then for every use case, if you, for example, take the use case of art trade and art auctions, right, we already have regulations in place, which are a little bit different from what we are currently experiencing on the market itself. For example, if you want to sell an art piece in Europe and you want to do this over an auction, which most of the NFTs are sold over an auction, you need to also ensure specific money laundering requirements. I mean, you always have to ensure them, but you have some more specific ones if you have art pieces over 10,000 euros. And these are things that are currently, in my opinion, not 100% in place. And we saw with the biggest auction from Christie's that this auction itself was actually done off-chain. So it was not done on the chain. It was just the ownership was transferred, but the ownership was not transferred by an auction mechanism. It was the auction was done offline. And my guess on this is due to the current regulation and the special kind of money laundering regulations we have in the art market.
Good answer for a really interesting question. I hope to have you back at one point and talk a little bit about how the NFT market evolved. Thank you very much so far for all the shared wisdom, and everybody who'd like to learn more, we'll have a lot of links down here in the show notes. Wherever you're watching this, you're listening to this podcast, go down here. There is a link to our blog post, and there we maintain all the current links. Thank you very much, Christian. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is startuprad.eu, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to startuprad.eu podcast, or check for the startuprad.eu internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the startuprad.eu skill as well.